Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Catch all the play-by-play with Susan Waldman and Dave Sims on the home of Yankees radio, The Fan.
All right, how we doing on this Monday morning? 1 hour down of our five-hour midnight ride. Four more to go as we take you to 5 a.m. in the warm-up show, 105. Here on The Fan, 888-808-1019. Coming off the NBA Finals where the Oklahoma City Thunder defeated the Indiana Pacers 103-91 to win their first NBA championship in franchise history. Congratulations to them. A basketball season over. And a very good NBA playoffs, to be totally honest with you. It was really a good NBA NHL. End NHL. I think I put end HL. A very good NBA playoffs, a very good NHL playoffs. But to me, now that the unfortunate injury to Tyrese Halliburton, who goes down with an obvious Achilles tear, and again, we have to have a conversation about what the hell is going on with the Achilles. And there is no doubt, like, maybe not so much in baseball. I mean, you run, obviously, in baseball, but like, it's becoming the calf is now the scariest injury you can have. Like, honestly, outside of a pitcher in elbow or a pitcher in shoulder, like, if you have a calf strain, you better make sure that thing is good. If you have a hamstring strain, you can live with it. You have an oblique strain, you can try and come back as soon as possible. You have, I don't know, a lat strain, whatever. Like, those strains, they hurt, they take time away, they're unfortunate. Some of them take a long time to heal, especially oblique can take a long time to heal. Like, calves, you can't mess around with. And I don't know, you know, if we're going to get to a point where, like, even for a game, you know, obviously this, he played through it for game 6 and game 7, it's going to cost him the entire year. Now, of course, you got to play game 7, I get it. Might never get there again in his entire career. But you can't mess with calves. How many different guys? We have Halliburton with a calf injury leads to an Achilles, obviously, around here. Aaron Rodgers was dealing with a sore calf the entire training camp and ended up it going down, you know, four snaps in, famously, to his first season with the Jets. A calf injury for Kevin Durant in the NBA Finals, Dame Lillard. Like, you can't mess with calf injuries. It's crazy. So we saw last night Halliburton go down with a torn Achilles, and you know, right now, this Knick team is poised to do something special. It's got a wide-open Eastern Conference. There is just no way about it. And this isn't about dancing on graves or taking joy in the fact that Halliburton's hurt. It sucks. And it sucked for Game 7 just as a basketball fan because, like, I could tell you I hate the I hate the Pacers, and I do. And I was rooting for Oklahoma City, no doubt. But I want to see a great game. I'm a sports fan. Ultimately, it's not going to cost me any sleep if the Pacers win or lose. I'll be more upset. I was rooting, sure. I had an interest in it, but it wasn't going to really cost me any sleep. They're not my team. I wanted to see a good Game 7. I wanted to see what Halliburton could do. And unfortunately, even though it was a good first half in the third quarter, it started to get away from them. When I left, they were up big in the third quarter or whatever it was when I had to head in here. And I listened to it a little bit on the radio, but felt like the game was in control. But now that Halliburton is gone for the year, and now that Tatum is gone for the year, and Dame Lillard is gone for the year, and the idea that the Cleveland Cavaliers, as talented as they are, as good as they are, and as good as a regular season as they just had, I don't trust them in the playoffs. The Knicks beat the crap out of them a couple years ago. They just manhandled them physically. And they got beat by the Pacers quickly. I know they had some injuries, no doubt. I get it. But they had big leads and blew them. Like, I'm just saying, I don't know if I trust the Cavs. So you have an opportunity right now to take on the East is getting better, right? Orlando just made a big trade to bring in a very talented player. They had a really nice year. The Pistons obviously are building something special there and play their asses off for that coach. And have one of the, you know, Cunningham is becoming one of the better young players in the NBA if he's not already there. So, like, the East isn't easy. But with Jalen Brunson and Cat, even though that dynamic hasn't clicked yet, and that's part of the reason you're looking for a new coach, it feels like the Knicks have an opportunity here in a wide-open Eastern Conference to do something they haven't done in a long time. And I'm just nervous. I got to be honest, I'm nervous they're heading into this with no coach. 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls. Sol in Queens. What's up, Sol? Hello? Sol? No? Going once, going twice? All right. Ted in Belrose. What's up, Ted?
You are C-Mac. Pleasure being on with you for a few minutes,
thank
man.
Thank you very much.
You're absolutely right, whatever. It was very heartbreaking to see, first of all, any player knowing that they're done. I mean, it was just it was heartbreaking, especially when they get that emotional. It's just, man, it was rough. And what was even rougher, obviously, because how would Carlisle have any idea? Now suddenly his rotation gets totally thrown out of whack. And, of course, you saw it in the fourth quarter when you know, guys like McConnell, and they had to play more minutes than they needed to, and it just
They had one run to get it to like a 10-point game or whatever. They were getting beat bad, and then they had a decent run. Look, Carlisle and this Pacers team, they did an incredible job. Rick Carlisle is one of the best head coaches in the league without exception, and he did a really great job with this team, no doubt. And they were on the precipice of doing something. They were tied 16-16. In the first quarter when he goes down. And he had hit, I know he hit two long ones. I think it might have even been three threes in the game already. So, I mean, Halliburton was playing well. And, like, who knows what that game looks like? Who knows?
Right. No, you're right. But listen, with respect to the Knicks now,
yes.
I don't want to think that I know more than anybody else, okay? But let's try to be a little logical, and yeah. I'm still scratching my head the way you're probably still scratching your head weeks later, actually. But let's try to put things in perspective.
Sure.
We had a head coach who led this team to back-to-back 50-win seasons, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We had a head coach who last year got as far as the semifinals of the Eastern Conference. This year, we went a step further. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think any other team in the postseason fired their head coach, correct?
I don't know. I don't believe so, no.
Exactly. Okay, right. Now, our guy was the only one who was shown the door. Now, I don't know what people think of James Dolan. I happen to think the guy is very eccentric. He's a very, very rich, spoiled kid who was left in empire by his dad.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know, I'm sure his passion for you know, playing in a band is certainly well documented. Well, we know the guy is probably a pothead, but we can't really prove that.
No, we can't prove that. No,
but if we can connect the dots, I bet you a dollar to a bagel, C-Mac, that Leon Rose did not want.
Yeah, I mean, listen. Yeah, I mean, we don't know that. I would tell you this. I find it hard to believe, and this is just me, and you're right. I think you started this by saying, like, we don't know any more than anybody else. I don't disagree with that sentiment, but I will. I will on one angle. I don't know. The reports are that the owner was the driving force of the exit meetings and the driving force of firing Thibodeau. I still don't think Leon Rose would have signed off on it if he didn't, at least on some level, believe in it. I'm sorry. Leon Rose was a super agent. He's got, you know, not as much money as Dolan, but he's got tons of money. Dolan gave this guy the job after Phil Jackson couldn't get it done, and he's turned it around for this guy. And we've seen him let guys run the Rangers for years. Something tells me if James Dolan said, "Hey, Leon, we're firing him," and Leon Rose was like, "No, I'm not firing the coach," I don't think James Dolan would have been like, all right, then you can pack your bags too. And Leon Rose just was like, okay, we'll fire the coach. Like, I think maybe there's a chance he would have kept him, or maybe there's a chance there would have been a longer discussion about it. But I find it hard to believe that Leon Rose was adamant against firing Tibbs and that the owner said, I don't care what you think. I still have a tough time with that one.
Well, okay. Now, let me ask you just one last thing, actually, and appreciate the time. Thibodeau is a disciple of Pat Riley, okay? And you know what?
Mm-hmm.
There's no knock there. The guy, every player who's come through the Knick pipeline over the last few years, he seemed to have a little magic Midas touch with him. I mean, look at what he did for Quigley. Look at what he did for R.J. Barrett. Unfortunately, we lost Hartenstein, and we lost DiVincenzo. I think those two losses might have tipped the scale to send the Knicks to the NBA Finals.
You don't have Cat, so you saying that team is better than the one? I mean, you got to trade DiVincenzo for Cat. So I get it. We'll see.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
I agree with you on Tibbs. Like, people, you know, I understand he doesn't play the bench. I get it. I do get it. I'm not saying it's minimized. I agree that he should play the bench more. But the idea that he doesn't develop people because he doesn't play the bench is just ridiculous to me. People actually say that. People say, well, he's not good at developing players. Like, no, he's not good at developing players. Look, let's count the names of players who have been better with the Knicks than they were anywhere else. Let's start with Julius Randle, who was really the beginning of this. Julius Randle becoming a stud was the beginning of this Knick turnaround. Julius Randle was in no man's land. Julius Randle was a failure in L.A. Julius Randle came over to the Knicks as someone they, you know, brought in just so they could possibly trade him in his expiring contract. He was nothing, and he became a star player. I mean, under Tibbs, he became a great player. Now, he's got his flaws, and I don't know if it was ever going to be the impetus of a championship, but, I mean, he completely turned his career around. You talk about, you know, you mentioned Quickly. I think Quickly really became something under Tibbs. DiVincenzo, where did he have his best year? Where did Josh Hart have his best career, part of his career? Josh Hart was bouncing around. Where has he become a fixture on a team and someone, you know, who's playing good basketball? What, Jalen Brunson, listen, I'm not saying he's the only reason Jalen Brunson became a superstar, but Jalen Brunson was under Rick Carlisle. Jalen Brunson was under Jason Kidd, didn't become a superstar. He came here and became Mr. Clutch under Thibodeau. You mentioned Hartenstein. Who was Hartenstein before he came to Nick? He made Hartenstein a lot of money. I think there are. Deuce McBride was a guy who was didn't have much offense, could just play defense. He's hitting big threes in clutch moments in the postseason. Like, I think Tibbs has done an incredible job of making players better. Incredible job. I think that's part of it too. Everyone who comes here has the best, you know, years of their career, other than the couple of key guys who, you know, speak out against them publicly or something. And then, I guess this year, you have to be fair. Clearly, Mikal Bridges did not have the best year of his career. And Karl Anthony Towns, that he played well over a stretch, but he was a superstar, or at least, you know, paid like one before he ever met Tibbs in a Knick uniform for sure. So I can't, this past year, it's harder to say, but previous iterations of this Knick team owe a lot to the development of these players under Tibbs, who were not nearly as good elsewhere, before or after. There are some, Quentin Grimes became better after he left. Let's try Saul in Queens again. What's up, Saul?
I see, Mac, I got 2 points, the Knicks and the Yankee point.
Sure.
So, first for the Knicks, I'm not going to enjoy this coming season. You know, like every little thing that goes wrong with Towns, with Brunson, it's going to be like a massive point. There's way too many expectations. It's just not going to be a fun year.
It's not going to be a fun year with the Knicks?
Yeah, because like nothing's going to matter in the regular season.
Correct.
Until they get to the postseason.
Correct.
And every little thing with Towns is going to be a massive deal. There's going to be way too much pressure.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure, and there will be that expectation now. There's no doubt about it. Without, as what I've been talking about all show here, the first hour and 20 minutes, you're right. Next year is going to come with a lot of expectation, a lot of the reality of being all we're going to care about is what they do in the postseason. The regular season, for the most part, we'll see with the new head coach. There'll be a little bit of enthusiasm early on, see what the offense looks like. We'll be looking for some things. But, yeah, you're right. It's not going to matter what happens in the regular season. They have to get to the postseason, and they have to win, and they have to get to an NBA Finals. And that's when we'll decide how we feel about this coach, how we feel about this team. So expectations do hinder your ability to enjoy a regular season. There's no doubt. You mentioned the Yankees. I'm assuming you're a Yankee fan. You know very well expectations.
Oh, yeah.
Like it almost feels like, and this is why I get called the Yankee shill a lot, is, you know, to me, I understand that the Yankees have a expectation. I understand that George Steinbrenner, and particularly the 90s dynasty, created this win the World Series or failure type mentality. But I am not going to, and this is where I differ than most people, I guess, or at least some Yankee fans, I am not going to put such a level of expectations or hold them to such a high standard that it makes it impossible for me to enjoy the baseball season. That I won't do. I like the baseball season. I love the Yankees. Yeah. I enjoy watching the baseball season. And if I'm going to hold them to a standard where they can't lose five games in a row, or I'm going to hold them to a standard where they can't make a base-running mental gaffe, or I'm going to hold them to a standard where the shortstop can't just be a nice player, he's got to be an all-star because he came up through the system, or I hold them to a standard where they can never blow a lead, or I hold them to a standard where they're supposed to win 110 games and cakewalk through the postseason, like, I'm not going to hold them to that standard and ruin my entire baseball year. I won't do it. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with the Knicks. And hopefully we don't get to that point where we can't enjoy big time wins. We can't enjoy a fun season of winning because all that matters is what they do in the last 3 weeks of it.
Yeah. And for the Yankees, for the trade, I think I'm good on the outfield and the starting pitching. I mean, you got Fried, Rodon. I think you could really put Schmidt or Heel in there. I don't think you got to get a big time starter.
I totally agree with you, and I feel very confident in telling you they're not going to. I feel very confident in telling you the New York Yankees are not going to trade for an upper echelon starting pitcher. They might trade for some depth if it makes sense, if they get a deal they like, if they think the value is there. And especially now, you can't trust Marcus Stroman. Heel's coming back from injury, and you've got now what feels like, I know it's only, you know, it's an IL stint, but what feels like kind of the end of Ryan Yarbrough and the magical run he was on. So if there's a fourth or a fifth level type starter that they think brings value to the team, I could see that. But I doubt very much they're going to trade for anyone who would start a playoff game ahead of obviously Max Fried or obviously Carlos Rodon or even Clark Schmidt. Like, I just don't see it.
Yeah, and I think they should go after at least Arenado. And what do you think about, like, Kenley Jansen on the Angels on a one-year deal? We could just bring him in over here. Have an awesome bullpen.
I think both of those make sense. I got to look at, I've stopped monitoring his numbers every day now. Nolan Arenado. I know he was fading a little bit. He got off to a pretty decent start to the year, and I don't think he continued that. Right now, he is hitting .247, 10 home runs, 39 RBIs. Let me see his OPS and some of the other stuff. Right now, he's got a .714 OPS. He's got a .98 OPS plus. So he's an average Major League Baseball player right now. He's an average Major League Baseball player. He's got a 1.4 WAR. .247, 10 home runs, 39 RBIs. He's pretty much doing what he's done the last couple years. So it's not overly exciting. It's, you know, you put him at third, you put Jazz at second base. You're probably a better team because you're clearly better defensively. But it's not an you know, we'll see what DJ LeMahieu gives them. But DJ LeMahieu is pretty much hitting the same right now over a short period of time as opposed to the entire season, because he's played 72 games. I'm not sure how many DJs played, but not nearly that many. It helps them defensively, clearly. He's still a very good defensive third baseman, and Jazz is better at second base. So that would be a move that helps them because it doesn't hurt them offensively. It might help them slightly offensively, but it certainly makes them a better defensive team. And Juanio Suarez, the third baseman for the Eugenio, I'm sorry. Suarez for the Arizona Diamondbacks is having a really good year, power hitter. Not great defensively, but I don't know if he kills you defensively. That's the kind of biggest name right now on the trade market for an impact bat at the infield position. I think that's where they're going to go. I think you could see them add as many as two different bats. I don't think it would be in the outfield unless, and this is going to be a conversation as we get closer, but and I was going to do this at some point, maybe not tonight or this week, but clearly now that they are in full-blown rotation of this offense. Right, as now you've gotten Stanton back, and the addition of Stanton really, I mean, Boone's been juggling it this whole time, but now you add Stanton to what you'd like to be mostly the everyday DH. Didn't have a great game yesterday, but he did get a big hit, and he just hits the ball hard, and he looks kind of locked in, although he did have some bad at-bats. But you want to play him mostly every day if you can. He's a force in the middle of the lineup. So now that you're starting to really get this rotation switch, you're noticing Jason Dominguez, I know he's a rookie, and I'm not saying that this really indicates how they feel about him, but they're playing Trent Grisham over and clearly Bellinger and obviously Judge. But to me, it's Trent Grisham or DJ or Jason Dominguez, and clearly Trent Grisham is winning out. Clearly, they prefer, one, he's excellent defensively, and he's having a better offensive season. I wonder if Dominguez becomes available at the trade deadline. Spencer Jones is a name in the minor league system. He strikes out a ton. I understand that. But he's got, in Double A, I think it's like a 928, 930 OPS, and he leads, I believe, the entire Double A minor leagues in home runs. And they say he runs like a deer, to quote the great Mike Francesa, he runs like a deer and he can play the outfield. Does Dominguez become expendable to make a trade this season? Because they're not playing him. They're not playing him as much as they're playing Trent Grisham. And Trent Grisham's already gone through a slump and they're still playing him. And they do have a young outfielder on his way up. Now, they could trade him if people like it, or maybe they could trade. I think Dominguez might be on the table at this trade deadline because they need impact bats, and he's right now in the mix of the outfield where, you know, it's thrusted into flux, and he's the odd man out most days. We saw Goldschmidt 2 days in a row. Goldschmidt's having a great year. He's an MVP. You know, probably going to be an all-star, has a chance to be an all-star. I think he's second in the all-star voting at first base, or first at first base. Like, he's going to be an all-star this year, and he's sitting multiple days in a row. Like, that's where this offense is right now. And that's the juggling job that Aaron Boone has to do, and quite honestly, I think he's doing a pretty good job of it. I know people get mad at every lineup. This latest one about Anthony Volpe really cracks me up. We'll get into it later as we transition to baseball. I wanted to try and finish out the hour talking Knicks. But, I mean, the Anthony Volpe crowd begging. I was at Fan Fest on Saturday taking calls, begging to give him a day off. Why is he in this lineup? Doesn't he ever get a day off? Give him a day off. Give him a day off. This is embarrassing. He can't play. Give him a day off. Boone comes out and says, we're giving him off Sunday. He has a hot game on Saturday because they didn't want to sit him Saturday because he's got good numbers against Eflin, the starting pitcher for Baltimore that day. He proves it, hits a home run, gets three hits, and now is like, how the hell can you sit Volpe off a three-hit day? You people make me laugh. You make me laugh. Alvarez sent down off a home run after finally coming through with a home run in the ninth on Saturday, and he's sent down. Like, we the timing of these things, we put too much stock into. And I understand that, you know, and I want to have a conversation about this too, 888-808-1019. I understand that one of the all-time Yankee greats and Yankee great prospects, Clint Frazier, did an interview on a podcast and said that the Yankees don't believe in hot. And so we're running with that. Anthony Volpe won three-hit game after an 0-for-24. The idea that now he's hot and you have to sit him off of one game with two bloop singles and an opposite field porch job. Like, that, now he's hot? One game, you're hot? We could debate whether or not the Yankees believe in hot. We could have another debate whether or not three hits one day after an 0-for-24 stretch makes you hot. I'd like to hear that one. 888-808-1019. Quick break. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. We'll start the transition into the baseball as both the teams still kind of struggling. Obviously, the Mets with another loss. The Yankees do win the series, but even in that series victory, there are some things you don't love. Inability to get runners in with third base. Judge making a base running blunder. Still some things you don't love about the team, but ultimately they get the win in the Mets. For me, it's the same conversation we've been having about the Mets the entire year. Yeah, David Peterson didn't have a good start. Yeah, the bullpen's faltered a little bit. And yes, right now the state of this rotation scares you slightly from where it was. And Griffin Canning didn't have a great game on Saturday, but kept you in it. Goes six innings. The problem with the New York Mets is the same problem, the offense. And yes, they exploded on Saturday. But you want to talk about being hot, right? Oh, we don't believe in hot, 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 hot. Mets hit how many home runs on Saturday and did what exactly on Sunday? Did what exactly on Sunday? Absolutely nothing. And the bottom of the order is now killing them. The top did their job at times this series. The bottom of the order is killing them. The Mets lose 2 out of 3. They are now a game behind Philadelphia for first place in the National League East. They come home to take on the Braves. You're going to see Frankie Montas this series. And yeah, the pitching is faltering. No doubt about it. The bullpen hasn't been as good. But this offense is supposed to be what carries them. And unfortunately, outside of Saturday, just...
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
It's not enough.
Talk New York sports with us. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 138. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. That's the number to call in. You can also hit me up on Twitter at CMAC. WFAN or X. I guess I'm the last of the party to still call it Twitter. I don't care. Calling it X just sounds weird to me. But either way, hit me up on whatever you want to call that platform at CMACWFAN. Talking a lot of basketball to start as we're coming off the heels of the finish of the NBA Finals as the Oklahoma City won their first champion. Oklahoma City Thunder won their first championship in franchise history. Halliburton for the Pacers goes down early in the first quarter with the game tied at 16. They battle to actually have a lead at halftime, but unfortunately the third quarter was inevitable, and Oklahoma City pulls away late in the game. And off of that injury, we've been talking a lot about how the Knicks now are poised to go capture a wide-open Eastern Conference. And they're going to have to do it with a brand-new coach. We still don't know who that coach is. The names... that as I'm watching it right now, the 2026 NBA title odds, the odds right now, the Oklahoma City, well, see, now I can't imagine how Cleveland's not the favorite. I was told the Knicks are the favorite, I guess, whatever different sports book. But the odds right now are the Oklahoma City Thunder at plus 200, the Cleveland Cavaliers at plus 700, and the New York Knicks plus 750. The Knicks are the third favorite. Someone told me they were the second and that Houston was behind them, so I guess whichever sports book you want to look at. But they are pretty much right now tied at the top of the Eastern Conference Finals with the Cleveland Cavaliers, and they are the third favorites to win the NBA championship next year. And that's without a coach. They've got to find a way to make this right hire. There's just you have to hire the right coach, and I just don't know if I've heard the name that makes me excited that they will. 888-808-1019. We can start the transition into the baseball a little bit, as obviously last night, Sunday Night Baseball, the New York Mets fell to the Philadelphia Phillies, and they lose the series 2-1. And, you know, I talked a lot about on Saturday, live from Fanatics Fest, about this offense. And to me, it's still about the offense. Now, later Saturday, they go on and have this offensive explosion. They have all the home runs. You know, they score all the runs. Alvarez, who gets sent down, we have to have a conversation about that, obviously, at 888-808-1019. And I guess we could start there before we even get into the game, because that news was earlier in the day. Alvarez, who hits the home run in the ninth of the Saturday game, the game they won, the game they scored 11 runs, he hits that home run in the ninth inning, and clearly struggling offensively. Now, I don't know if there's any meaning to waiting until he hits a home run. I know, Fleegs, you sent out a tweet saying maybe it's to not send him down all doom and gloom, send him down with a little bit of confidence off a home run. I just think, I was listening a little bit to the Evans podcast as well. He believes it's a defensive thing, and after he couldn't block a ball earlier in the game, that they had had enough. Now, look, he's been bad in every which way, right? Defensively, since he's come up, he's been really good, but as of late, we're seeing some defensive miscues. He's not been as good. And then when you play with Torrens as your backup catcher, and he's clearly been better defensively, even though he had his mental gaffes as well against Atlanta, he's clearly better defensively. So when you play almost 50-50 at times with these two, and you get to see Torrens being the better, certainly, you know, throwing runners out, he's been incredible. It makes Alvarez look worse, but he's been worse with and, you know, they talk about it all the time. Ron Darling talks about it all the time. This was a thing that came up with Gary Sanchez too. His approach of having one leg on the ground doesn't help you be able to move and block balls. But that game on Saturday, I forget which inning it was, but he just casually kind of did a backhand to try to stop it instead of trying to get on his knees and get in front of it and block it. And we saw that. We saw the running behind the run, throwing behind the runner. And then really the main issue is he's got a 600 OPS. This is a guy now 3 home runs who is supposed to be at 25 home runs. He was going to be part of the Mets' real answer at the catcher position and deep in this lineup, and he has been awful. I don't know if I'm a fan of sending a guy down in June necessarily. And while the Mets I know they're losing now, but the Mets are a game out of first place. They're a very good team. Offensively, they're struggling, as they're certainly not going to get better offensively with the call up at the catcher position. But I think in this situation, I do understand it's a lot of noise around him right now with this Met team in New York. We'll see if he can go downstairs, what you're looking for. And I don't know if it'll be long. I'll be totally honest with you. I don't know if he's going to go down there and retool his swing. I mean, if you're looking to get him back, I don't think this is a long-term, send him down to the minors, work on everything, transition everything. You know, I think they believe in him. We've seen him be successful at the major league level. If you want to send him down, to me, it's just to send him down to calm his head, get away from it all, go down and hit lesser pitching, and maybe build your confidence up. And I would suspect once he starts hitting down there, I don't think it would be very long before they call him back. I don't think this is now hey, Alvarez is broken. Let's send him down and retool everything, work on some things, change his swing dramatically because there's a natural hole in it. And we'll, you know, look at him maybe later in the year or even next year. Like, I don't think that's it. I wouldn't be surprised if he's down there for two weeks, 3 weeks max. He starts hitting and they call him right back up. Because this, it feels like a little bit of a confidence issue for him. He's got, you know, he's having a terrible season, and it just feels like he's wearing it. So we'll see if it helps the New York Mets and Alvarez by sending him down. But then we get to the series against Philadelphia. And again, on Saturday, I was talking about the offense as opposed to the pitching. And yes, again, you know, Griffin Canning wasn't all that good. What did he go, 6 innings and gave up 4 runs? Not a brilliant start, not what he had given you a lot of the year, but for your 5th or 4th starter, which is what he was designed to be. He was not designed to be thrusted into the top of the rotation. Both injuries and his early success ended up doing that, But that's not what you're expecting from Griffin Canning. Griffin Canning is the depth piece who is your fifth starter or, you know, hopefully your fill-in fifth starter. Like, he wasn't designed to be the third starter on this team. And if you can get, you know, what, because we have to have our legitimate understanding of what he is and our expectations of him. And that's why we talk about this rotation. What they've done is unsustainable at the level they were doing it. They could still have a good rotation as they're still waiting for guys to come back. You're still waiting for, we'll see our first action of Montas in this week coming up. You're still waiting for Minaya. Obviously, Sanga is probably gone until, I don't know, at least the All-Star break, maybe a little bit after that even. And you've got to tamper your expectations of this pitching staff. You've got Clay Holmes, who has already pitched more innings than he ever has in his major league career. At some point, he might need a break. At some point, you know, you might see him falter a little bit. We have seen him, even with the Yankees in a closing position, when you talk about bad Clay Holmes, most of it is in the second half of season. So we'll see where they are right now. You have to temper your expectations. This team is built to score runs. The New York Mets are built, in my estimation, and you can call me up at 888-808-1019 and tell me if you think I'm wrong. The New York Mets are built on having an offense that scores a ton of runs and a rotation that they, I don't want to use the word piecemealing, but a rotation with, you know, a Kodai Senga who could be an ace. He's pitched like it this year for sure. You know, you spend a little money on him. You spend a little money on Minaya. But for the most part, you're building a rotation with guys who you feel you can get better out of. And you're building a rotation that can be good enough to supplement and be alongside with your offense, not the driving force of your team. It's not that the Mets pitching lab, quote unquote, and they certainly haven't given us this opinion. It's just this is how good they've been, so we all think it. Like, this pitching lab isn't designed to turn, you know, lackluster starting pitchers into the best rotation in baseball. They've managed to do that for a calendar year, and it's been remarkable. But it's, I don't even think it's the design. The design is to just get a good rotation, a solid starting rotation, to supplement an offense that should be scoring a ton of runs with guys like Soto, who finally came through on Saturday and multiple home runs and looked every bit of Juan Soto, right? Had a ball off the wall as well as the two home runs. And I talked all Saturday about he needs to impact this team and drive in runs and be a driving force of this team as opposed to just, you know, a good hitter, which he's been for a while now. Like, he's not Bobby Bonilla. He's not some sort of terrible, disgusting disaster of a free agent year one, but he hasn't been the driving force. He hasn't been. Lindor's driven the team at times. Obviously, Pete Alonso has driven the teams at times. It hasn't felt like Soto has ever driven the team, or at least driven the offense, because the offense has never even driven the team. It's always been about the starting rotation. And now as it's faltering, and last night, David Peterson, who was cruising along early on, the first couple innings of this game, the first at bat, he strikes out Schwarber on a slider. He's looking good. And then in the fourth inning, it just falls apart on him. Right? Earlier than that, he gets first and second. He picks off Soso off a second base, which was a big pickoff play. He gets out of that. And it just felt like you were on your way to another really good Peterson start, and then the fourth inning just happens, and he kind of falls apart. He gives up the leadoff home run, then he gives up the big shot to Sosa, and suddenly they put up a five spot in the fourth inning. But that doesn't mean the game is over right then. And the offense coming off a Saturday where they hit all these home runs, they explode for 11 runs. They do, you know, everything you could ask them to do, and you thought they were going to break out of it. You thought it was the beginning of something special against Luzardo, who, let's be honest, hasn't pitched well. He's been a disappointment for Philadelphia. Now, he's got decent numbers against the Mets going back to his time with the Marlins, but this is a guy who struggled this year. And they get absolutely nothing done. And the bottom of the order is, you know, just not good enough right now. And I think we talk, as we get closer to the trade deadline and we try and figure out who these teams are, the Mets need bats. And to me, you can either get it in center field, you can get it in the infield, because right now, look, you're waiting for Vientos to come back, but Beatty hasn't looked nearly as good as he had that brief hot stretch. Terrible to start, had a brief hot stretch, not looking great again. Mauricio looks overmatched at times. I think he's going to go down, would be my guess, when they bring back Vientos. Obviously, Acuna hasn't been all that good. You've got Taylor, who, let's be honest, I like Taylor, and a couple people call up when I say we need to trade for center fielder, and they're like, well, what? Taylor's been great. Taylor has been great, but he's a fourth outfielder. He's hitting 230 or whatever. You're not getting enough production out of center field when some of the other pieces aren't doing as well. Like, I was just talking with Fleegs. Like, I don't like Jeff McNeil. I still don't. You look at the Saturday game, I screamed and yelled about it live from Fanatics Fest, how the biggest at-bat of this series to me. The Friday night game, sorry. I screamed about it on Saturday. The Friday night game against Wheeler, and we talked about that pitching matchup. That pitching matchup was as big a advantage for that one team can have. With Tidwell coming up from the minor leagues and throwing Zach Wheeler out there, that's as big a pitching matchup as you could possibly have. And the Mets in the first inning had an opportunity to make a statement against Philadelphia. And the statement being, we kick your ass. I don't care what happened against the Braves. I don't care we're in a 6-game losing streak. And I don't care we have to throw Tidwell in this game against your best. I don't care. When the Mets and Phillies get together, we outplay you. And if he comes through with a base hit there or does anything there, instead of hitting to an inning-ending double play with the bases loaded and one out, if he gets a base hit, if he laces one down the line and they jump out to an early lead, that the entire of the complexion of the game changes, maybe the entire series changes. Because then you follow it up with Saturday and suddenly the Mets are back. And instead, he gets into a terrible double play. On Saturday, is an opportunity to drive in runs. He can't hit a ball on the ground. He pops up a short fly ball. They put him in center field. He's not a center fielder. Right? He drops a pop-up. Yes, Nimmo comes running across him a little bit and causes a problem. But that ball's got to be caught. And it's not that he's terrible in center field. He's just not... He's not very good in center field. And so right now, I'm looking for a bat, an impact bat, if I can get one, at either second or short. Second or center. Right? We've been talking about center. And yeah, McNeil's had a couple of big hits. He played well in the Colorado series. I don't trust him. I've been saying this forever. I mean, for a year and a half, it felt like obvious, and now he's coming alive a little bit at times. But you look at his numbers, me and Fleegs were going over it, with men on, just men on base, period. He's hitting 297. I'm sorry, that's on base percentage, rather. I'm sorry. 180. With men on, he's hitting 180. With runners in scoring position, he's hitting 205. He's got two home runs with runners in scoring position. One of them was in Colorado. They need a bat somewhere in the either infield or center field, bare minimum. They might be able to, might try and add two bats. But, like, I'll live, like, people love Taylor. Me and Fleegs were just talking about this. I can live with an excellent defensive center fielder who's a light-hitting guy if I have more punch throughout the lineup. And right now we're getting to the point where I don't know if I can trust this offense to be that. Hopefully Vientos comes back and turns himself into last year's Vientos. That's going to solve a lot of their ills. But right now, they just don't have it at third. I don't believe in it at second. You have nothing from the catcher. When you're supposed to have the top prospect in baseball, a guy who had 25 home runs for you, you have to send him down. You're not getting enough in the back end of this lineup. And so to me, I'm looking either infielder or center field. Maybe both. And clearly you're looking bullpen. I don't know if you're looking starting rotation. To me, right now, it seems like you need the bat because you got to bolster this offense. There's only so much you can do. You want to add another arm in the back end of the bullpen? Fine. Starting rotation is going to be tough. And, you know, the Mets don't want to put a lot of value into it. So I don't know about money, but on a short-term deal, even prospects, do you trade prospects for starting pitching? I don't know how they'll go about it. But right now, the Mets just offensively, I know the pitching has faltered, and obviously the manager again talking about now he's worried about the bullpen and how many innings they've pitched because of the starting pitching. And now, you know, obviously Brazoban's thrown a bunch. Obviously Reed Garrett has thrown a bunch. You're relying on some guys. Diaz hasn't pitched all that much during this losing streak, but you're going to obviously heavily rely on him. You've got three guys that you truly, truly trust. Buteau, you know, isn't quite there yet. And you really have those. You have Diaz, you have Brazoban, you have Reed Garrett. That's it. So you're looking for bullpen depth, you're looking for offense. But right now, look, They need to come home and play much better against the Atlanta Braves. The Atlanta Braves got bad news about a broken rib cage for Chris Sale. I don't know how long he's going to be out. I don't know how significant of an injury it is, but they've got to come out and play better against the Braves. But to me, it's this offense. It's not about the pitching, as much as that has failed them as well. It's not about the pitching. It's about an offense that Friday night had an opportunity to do something special against Wheeler and failed. An offense that blew up on Saturday with a bunch of solo home runs and had a good night. Don't get me wrong, had a good night. And then followed up with another lackluster performance on Sunday Night Baseball against a pitcher with a 5.5 ERA who's been struggling all year. And they can't do anything. They've lost 8 of 9, and they are a game under the Philadelphia Phillies after being up 5 just what feels like a week and a half ago. Same thing for the Yankees. We'll get to the Yankees too. But the New York Mets, it's about this offense not being what we hoped it would be. It's about this offense not being nearly as good as we thought it would be. It's about the flaws in this team. It's about the young kids. Like, a lot of time is spent on the failures of the New York Yankees and their development. And rightfully so, it's been a major problem for them throughout the years. But you look at the Mets right now, let's be fair. Vientos has had a great job last year, and I still think he can be that player. But they just sent down a catcher who was the top prospect in baseball. Mauricio, he's killing it in AAA. Comes here, struggles, hits one long home run, has struggled since. Acuna really hasn't had much of an impact on this team. Beatty was the top third base prospect in all of baseball. So, like, if you look at it, they've really struggled with their young kids. They have not gotten enough. They have not gotten enough from the back end of the lineup, and they've not gotten enough from the young prospects that have come up. You've got the top overall prospect in baseball just sent down to the minors and the top third base prospect in all of baseball, and he's struggling. And outside of a 3-week stretch where Beatty was on fire, hitting opposite field home runs, outside of that, he has not really performed. You've got a fourth outfielder in center. You got no offense from your... I don't think you have clutch offense from second base. You don't have any offense from your catching position. You haven't gotten anything from third. You have a fourth outfielder in center. It's just not enough offensively, and this pitching rotation was not going to keep it up this entire time like this. Griffin Canning was not going to pitch to a 2.4 ERA the entire year. David Peterson is going to go out and throw 8 shutout innings every single game. Now, again, he was bad in this game. It's a stinker. He gave up 5 runs. He gave up the big 3-run home. He gave up the big home run. I'm not excusing him. He's part of, if not the main reason they lost this particular game, but the offense just isn't doing enough. And they're going to have to look to add a bat at this deadline. But in the meantime, they're getting Frankie Montas back. He's been terrible in his rehab assignments. We'll have to see if this is if the bright lights is a term I'm hearing over and over again when asked about him. If the bright lights of the city, the bright lights of Major League Baseball kind of reawaken something inside him, and just seeing Hefner and the rest of the pitching lab can, turn him around from what he's been in the minor league so far. But they've got issues right now. And last night was a game that's infuriating because they scored all those runs on Saturday and they show up for Sunday Night Baseball and they got nothing for you.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.